So our next speaker is Fernando Pineda Reyes, and he is CEO of Crea Results, and co-founder with his sister Diana of an organization created and led by community health workers / promotores de salud. He is working on environmental justice and health disparities, current programs in cardiovascular disease, breast cancer, tobacco control, diabetes, healthy eating and active living and oral health, everything you would want. He does it. So, Fernando, come on up.
So that's my whole presentation. You can keep staring at the arrow. Make it mean whatever you want.
It's not randomized, though.
No. Maybe it stands for moving forward, but I didn't say that. I am going to hopefully not get you dizzy, because this PowerPoint is a little interactive. We work at Crea Results. And Crea Results is an organization of community health workers, promotores de salud. What we mean by that is we don't get involved into the politics of how do we be called. We sometimes understand that while we want to declare who we are authentically and genuinely how we go by, and sometimes it's our name and last name, in the community, people don't care too much about the job title. It's more about the job description. You know, tell me, what am I supposed to do? When? Are you paying me? Are you feeding me? Where can I do this? So I, with my sister Diana, have started our organization out of a challenge and an opportunity almost like 8 years ago. And we're both from Mexico and have the privilege to be living in Denver, Colorado, and a place that we call home now. Why do we do the kind of work that we do? It's because somebody told us that there was an opportunity and there was also a need. We started Crea Results as a social enterprise. And what we mean by that is we are an organization that hires, trains, and uses the Promotora community health workers model to do transformation in the community. We like saying, and sometimes it sounds a little challenging to others when we say, we think volunteering is a privilege, and we mean by that is that it's a privilege to be entitled of the keys of the building, of transporting an elderly in my car, to be trusted with money, but it's also a privilege that some of us have that means I don't have to be working right now so I can carve an hour to help somebody else. And we know it's not easy, and sometimes we tend to kind of challenge people by their passion and say, well, if you care about this, you should help me, you know? I want to do a focus group, and I need 10 people that look like you. I'm like, well, I can get them, but I need to be home feeding my family. Well, if you care, you know? It's like, well, I care, but I just can't, or I really don't want to right now, because I don't trust you. I don't know what the heck you want. And yes, I can cajole 10 of my friends so they can help you with your research project. So we get involved as a partner, and yes, we do get invited like, hey, sorry, we didn't write you into the grant, but I have 10 grand and I need you to do 90% of the work, or can we write a grant together? And that's the part that we like more. Maybe I'm preaching to the choir, but this is some slides to basically say why our job is there. Well, because we work with primarily the Latino community. We are part of many diverse teams, working with everything from GLBTIQ communities to the Asian American Pacific Islander communities, African American, Africans. Denver has a very large community of Russian community. We receive almost about 1,500 people from Burmese every year. And so it's very diverse, but I'm from Mexico, so got a little bit of an edge and an expertise just being myself, not because I know everything about Mexicans. But there's the largest minority in the U.S. The census just keeps saying that we're just going to be getting more and more and more. The last dot there says around 102 million will be here by the middle of the 21st century. Colorado has a very large community of immigrants. The Latino community primarily is from Mexico, 80% of them. We understand the different things that goes with dealing with different subgroups. Even if we're from Mexico, as you know that, we speak different people from Peru, from Puerto Rico, from El Salvador, and while we're privileged of the whole Hispanic epidemiological paradox that kind of make us be a little bit more resilient. We still suffer from many different cardiovascular chronic disease that the minute that you arrive in this country, as you know, your health starts deteriorating by the access to certain things that you didn't have before and the limitation of things that you had before, like walking or physical activity and levels of stress. We know that there's access barriers. There's everything from not having access to the services to sometimes misusing, or really it's your only choice. You go to the ER not because you're stupid and you don't want to help. It's just the only choice you have. And you kind of wait until it's the last minute, but if your kid is no longer feeling okay, who cares if this doesn't gonna help the economy? You know, you take your kid to the ER up until you learn later how to do it different. There's a reality, and this is data, and my PowerPoint, I think, will be available to you, so I don't want to, sorry that it's too heavy, but that was the intent, you know. There's facts. $178 billion are used for the issues that affects Latinos and chronic disease, heart disease, renal disease, high blood pressure. It's all there, and it's all the, everything has a reference there. If you don't believe me, I didn't invent it. I just copied it from some other website. Of course, the issues of obesity and, you know, our informal research says that, you know, primarily a woman who arrives to the United States because of their network doesn't get created right away. Sometimes unofficial research says that they gain from everything from 5 to 10 pounds in the first year. And that, again, it's before identified that smoking or eating not healthy food is sometimes just available to there. And that's if they didn't land it into a food desert or any other more challenging situation or immediate community. All this has to do, of course, with the cost, the different things. Of course, talking about in the Affordable Care Act is already being left out by the get-go, people who are not having access to the reform. This is where we start, which is again working with the monolingual Spanish-speaking community and the Latino community. Promotores de Salud, as we said, that they don't need to be deployed. Sometimes people want us to do work outside of the Denver metro area, and we do. We do work locally at state level, and sometimes people say, hey, can you come to Boston? And yeah, I was like, sure, if you fit me and send me there, I'll go and talk to you about what we're doing. But you have the assets there. The mission of organization is about identifying the assets. And again, it's meeting people where they are, but don't leave them there. We strongly believe sometimes I have to coach you, teach you something, but I cannot do it for you. And we have to respectfully challenge each other to be integrated, to be part of the citizenship that it requires to be an active member of the community. The program that I'm here to talk to you today is a program called CHARLAR. It's a very long acronym for Community Heart Health Actions for Senior Latinos at Risk. I didn't invent that one. Somebody before me did. And it's basically a 12-week cardiovascular disease program that includes diabetes. We use an evidence-based curriculum. It's a 12-week program. We integrated cool stuff, like we do Framingham testing, we do screenings, blood pressure for cholesterol, lipids, diabetes, weight at the beginning of the intervention, and then at the end, which it lasts about 3 months. Our main partner is the Colorado Prevention Center. They come up with the idea, we find each other in a conference, and it started from, hey, can you help me get this thing going and pick your brain about this, to 5 years, 6 years into it, we're now partnering our relationship as I was sharing the challenges. It's great. It's not perfect yet, but we're working towards a more perfect union. And to really saying like everything from like, hey, can you help with the recruitment, to can you lead this? And can you have the resources available for delivering this intervention as it's supposed to be done and without cutting corners? We have found different lines of funding, primarily locally, and this is some of the foundations that have provided us with, as I say, already we're into year five, and we have a year and a half more of funding to go. The target population is people who say self-identify Latino, Latina, Hispanic, Chicano, Chicana, however you want to call yourself, but kind of like, hey, this program for Latinos. Why? Not because we want to be exclusive, just because, again, working on health disparities, we know that while our work is to break the silos about prevention education, sometimes we do have to take and bring the information, the education, to places that have not been getting it as other communities. So we have a very specific area, a geographic area in the northwest, southwest area of Denver. This is the 45 years of age, as you say, we're seniors at 45. We actually started at 65, but of course, after we did the first iteration, our CAC community advisory committee and the community members says, well, this is really cool, but why in the heck you didn't tell me this 10 years ago, you know? Now I'm just like, well, this is great, I'm gonna go tell somebody about it, but I don't really feel like I can do a big difference. So we talked to the funders, we lowered to 55. We keep hearing, this is great, but my daughter should be listening to this, you know? I already made changes in my diet, but she's not. And she's pre-diabetic, and she was diabetic when she had a baby, and so we lowered to 45. This is a little bit of how I got created. Of course, we run it from a community-based participatory research approach. It's not a research project, but we run all the elements of research. We do very serious evaluation. We provide all the different aspects. We cannot do it, as never any program can run without the partnerships from the churches, the local organizations. Say we identify a curriculum that we didn't invent it, but we did transform, called Pasos Adelante, that comes after the, it's an evolution of the NHLBI curriculum of Tu Corazón, Su Vida, but then we actually say, hey, let's do it this way. We train the promotores, we train ourselves. We say, you're not just gonna train us and, you know, have us work for you, we're gonna run it with you. And we challenged that. We challenged that, we did all the research of the needs assessment, the recruitment, the intakes, the baseline data, all the different things of the implementation. We have a community advisory committee that is challenging the status quo of just having an advisory capacity to having a directory capacity. People who say, I'm gonna play my gatekeeping role and I would not let you do anything unless you really listen to what I have to say and take the considerations. And that has been really cool because working from the community, you know, power respects power. And when we have our seniors really challenging our partners respectfully, things tend to run a little better because we can foresee a lot of the things that sometimes you have to learn the hard way. These are all the program components as I described. We also offer in counseling and referral. We have doctors, our screenings that provides the, we read your new reports, we tell you what you need to do, where you are, how things you can do better, and refer you to different services. These are some of the sessions, and I will not bore you with that, but of course, all of our sessions talk about different things that have to do. They're very, very, didactical, they're very, very like, they're teaching moments. And sometimes people say, well, people don't like being told, and we know they don't like to be told, but gotta realize sometimes the community members attending to our classes, even if we say it's a conversation, they still call you the teacher, the professor, because they think the information we're providing to them is the first time ever they actually hear it that way, and more importantly, the first time that they actually gotten it. By week 7, it's my favorite one, 8, it's when people, after the glucose class, people start raising their hand and you say, what do you have to say? Well, I want to say something to the group. And they really come out as diabetic and they start crying and they're saying, you know, for 20 years, the doctors are telling me that I'm diabetic and this is the first time I'm saying it. I am diabetic. And it doesn't make me feel any better, but it does makes me feel that now I am choosing, I'm owning this thing that first I thought it was castigo divino, or I was being punished by not paying taxes, or by not taking my dog for a walk, or not talking to my sister, to really realize that, well, my pancreas stopped producing insulin, you know? And it was like puberty, you know? Like, you cannot control it, you know? It just happened. And now I'm going to do something about it. So my thing, and as you know from my notice of the title of my presentation, it was like, I am impatient because I'm a community member. And I was even trying not to get too sarcastic in my presentation because, like, here's more evidence. It's like, we already know it works. Really? We just need to figure out how we work about keeping things going that work. There's tons of evidence already, tons of lead reviews that have been proven that the methodology and the process works. And we're not saying just throw us some money. We're saying, hey, this is working. Look at it to the people that they are actually now walking and they were not doing it before. Our program has a walking component. We have Zumba classes at the beginning of each class. This is some of the data for some of you who like to see these numbers. We have reached out over 800 people now. The data that I'm presented is from the 7 different cohorts we have done so far, which is about 720 people. The data of the other 250 haven't been produced yet. So this is just thoughts about a couple of the years before us. We have a percentage, as you know, 30% of male participation, which is really cool because we invite the couples to come together. We have, as you can see, sometimes the health insurance, sometimes it is there, but it's not that everybody there, it's undocumented or they have no access into these systems. And even the low income and the different things that we have. So one of the things that we have noticed is, of course, this was where we started. People have already hyperlipidemia that, of course, matches the national data, hypertension, overweight, prediabetes, and the diabetes that matches exactly kind of what a lot of other places in the nation have, around 30% of people with diabetes. This is some of the data we have seen of the difference of people getting activated, getting sometimes their medication under control, sometimes just making a small change into the way they go about their life that allows them to really just start saying, as we say in our classes, knowing something, it doesn't make a difference. What makes a difference is the action that you put in place about what you already know. You're not going to hear anything new in these classes. It's going to sound like, well, I already knew that. But hopefully you can get those aha moments that now allows you to say, I always knew this, but now I'm going to do something about it. And I'm going to start walking. One of the things that we're working on, as always, is securing the continuation of funding. We're expanding our partnerships. We want to do another 600 participants by 2013. And we're going to continue to demonstrate effectiveness. We're trying to move into more comprehensive evaluation that allowed us to track people after they finish the program, three months, 6 months. We haven't get there yet, but we're working on it. One of the things that we're working on, and this is, again, as I shared with you, our relationship is great, but it's not super great. We have to convince our academic friends that we could do this. That really, for us, just to help them find a lady that speaks Spanish, that was not a help promoter. That was not a promotora. If we all started like that, but it was not just about, hey, help me find people who can be part of this program. We're not service deliverables. We don't deliver services. We engage people. So we have growing pains, and respectfully, we have challenged each other, and sometimes not too respectfully. You know, we disagree a lot on certain things. But we are almost there with the part that we're now looking for funding together. Before, our academic friends just kind of let us know when a new line of funding will arrive, what they were pursuing. Sometimes we didn't even know the whole grant. We just were able to provide our piece and then don't ask the difficult questions of what you're making, but you do know how much I'm making, so that's not fair. We are, the program components, we are really looking for the better collaboration within the academic components and also what we're able to provide in the community. You know, little challenges that, you know, they wanted us to identify a vendor for food, but they needed to be very well established and have this liability and something, but $6 a person. It's like, you know, I have a community member who can do great food, evidence-based, you know, healthy. And no, we don't have that component. You're going to have to let us do it and know that we're doing it the right way. The shared decision-making is still there. One of the things we're working, again, it's like, again, presentations like these, sometimes I get to identify it or they do, but sometimes, again, I don't care about the report or about the paper. I don't care about my tenure because I don't have one. But I do think sometimes we have to challenge how the visibility gets created and what's important to you And the data is as important to me to be able to have enough pens for my intervention. I cannot do it with a nice clipboard or with something that allows me to deliver the class. I think, again, some of the things that we're still working, again, this is some of the pictures of how it goes. It's all grassroots. It's all from basements of universities. There's always a celebration at the end. This is some members of our community advisory committee. Two of them are not there because they don't like pictures, but they're there. And I think, again, some of the things that I left you with is like our conversation is not over. We're looking for partnership that allowed us nationally to work on the recognition and the standardization of not the position, not credentialing, just recognizing and honoring that people in the community has the capacity, and we don't necessarily need to give them a card, but something else that says, I see you as a partner. And of course, some of the things that we're always challenged is like, we're learning as we go, but we're coming not from a deficiency factor, but from recognizing those assets. And I think, again, things that you probably already hear before. The community is there, ready to be engaged. They all want to play. They all want to be recognized by their abilities and their assets. They may not be great using Excel, but they're great using Facebook. They may not be great talking to 10 people, but they're great talking to two at a time. They may not be great drivers, but they can find anywhere around in the community. So with that, just to keep you with the last slide, there was, of course, you can contact me there, but I had another slide. I don't know where it is. I apologize, my partner's slide was there and it just disappeared, but this is my contact information. We have to put you in touch with Craig Capral, our program manager, and other people around it. Apologize if I went over, but that's all I have to say. Thank you.